This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Got something to say to World Wide Wave? Email worldwidewave@ymail.com.
Surfing the globe, bringing you LGBT news, views, and personalities from around the world, one country at a time. It's the World Wide Wave, here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Thank you to the gang of Gen Next. This is World Wide Wave, live from Melbourne, Australia. I'm Tom, joined by Squirrel and Beck. This week we explore Egypt and their Arab Spring. We're joined here in the studio by Mohamed Hassim, writer and director of the play Teach Me to Cry, a play about the Arab Spring in Egypt. Also with us in the studio, Giuseppe and Will, also from the cast of Teach Me to Cry. Later tonight we'll be speaking with them, and we've got tickets to give away to their show. But as always, we like to start off the night with some music, so Beck, what have you discovered for us this week?
Well, first of all, I have to thank Nancy McHale for all the music tonight. And first off, we've got Interway Bus by Nancy Agram. We're back on the World Wide Wave. We're here today with Mohamed Hassim, a writer and director of the play Teach Me to Cry. Mohamed's going to tell us a little bit about Arab Spring, which is what the play is based on. Tell us what Arab Spring is, Mohamed.
Well, thanks for having me on the radio. I'm really excited to be here. I guess the Arab Spring for me is a personal kind of thing, because I lived in Egypt for a couple of years working in Egypt, and all I could think about was a revolution, was change. The country needed to change because it's such a nice country, nice people, nice atmosphere, but the revolution needed to happen. Something needed to change, and it didn't change while I was there, unfortunately. I left 2010, before the revolution happened. So I started writing the play while I was living there, working as a journalist. And when it did happen, I was back in Australia. So I had to go back and find out if anything did change. You know, what did revolution mean? You know, you see it on TV, there's like 10 million people down the street screaming, chanting that we want the president down, we want things to change. But a lot of people didn't know what they wanted to change, where to start first. So going back there was kind of an eye-opener for me. It's like, what needed to change? Did it change? And unfortunately, a lot didn't change.
So you mentioned you were a journo back in Egypt.
Yep.
How difficult was it for you to get around and to report the media, report on what you were seeing?
Well, working as a journalist in Egypt, you had to be in the office by 8 in the morning. So that meant you had to be up by 5, because it takes 3 hours to get, drive 20 kilometres. So that was the pain. That was the first pain. You'd walk in the office, there's a senior editor, he'd give you a list of things to do, and they had to be done by midday. And they wouldn't be done by midday. He knew they wouldn't be done by midday, but he's hopeful. I mean, in terms of traffic and just trying to get things done.
So did you actually have an afternoon list? Or was your morning list expected to take
a day? Our morning list took about 2 days. So, yeah, traffic was one thing. The way people treated you was another thing. First, I got to find out where you're from, the class what kind of class you belong to. And then the treatment started from there. And that was really annoying.
Can you tell us a bit more about the class system?
Okay, the class system's it's very distinct over there. I mean, Australia and in the US, we call our societies classless societies. And I think we try to live that way. But overseas, in Egypt, it's very clear who you are by the way you speak, the way you move your hands, what you wear, your accent. It's really funny, in Cairo especially, you can go to certain areas 10 kilometres away and you know that person's upper class or that person's working class from the way they spoke, the way they order their coffee. And as soon as you see an indicator of where they're from, you start treating them in a different way, whether it's, treat them better or worse. And it's really kind of sad. It's like the upper class there don't mingle with the working class unless they have to, unless I need you to tow my car, unless I need you to buy bread off you. But if I don't need a service off you, I won't speak to you. I won't even acknowledge that you're there.
After the next track, we'll come back and talk about the play. So this next song is by Mustafa Amar, and the song's called Habibi. And Habibi means darling, doesn't it, Mohammed?
It means I love you, Habibi.
Ah.
This is Joy 94.9, World Wide Wave, and this week we are in Egypt. We are joined here in the studio with the writer, director, and the cast of the play that is currently playing at, what is the name of the...
The Owl and the Pussycat.
There we go. I couldn't remember if it was the Owl and the Cat or the Owl and the Pussycat. Beautiful. Now, before we actually get into the play, I have to ask very specifically, in your bio, it says that this is the first play of its kind in Australia, as its nature is a little absurd and breaks through conventional theater ideas. Can you just expand a little bit on the concept and the statement, this play is absurd?
I mean, when we staged the play in Egypt, I wanted it to be a kind of democratic outing. So we sit around kind of a table and talk about our problems, our issues, our problems with our fathers, our problems with our mothers, our problems with the country, but not make it a play where people are sitting far away and watching an installation happen, where they're actually involved in the play. So they would sit around the actors and we would speak to them naturally and just talk about problems and hope they would respond.
And it's the same with when we do it here. The audience is very much a part of the production. Like, it's... And everybody takes it differently. You know, we're really, really close up and eye contact all the time. It doesn't really feel like you're watching a play. It's just more you're sitting in a room with these people and you're just watching a scene. You're just a fly on the wall.
And it's great because you feel like you're... As actors, we're going through this journey. And it's different every night because there's different audiences every night and they react to what you say to them in a completely different way. And it's amazing to see those reactions on the people's faces and how they feel in reaction to what you're saying to them.
Now, Mohammed, you said that you were inspired and the idea came to you to write this play because you were in Egypt at the time, and this play is with the background of the Arab Spring. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
I think the play came from a whole bunch of frustration. I think I was sitting on a bus one day going to work, a 3-hour trip on the way to work in the morning, and everyone's sleeping next to me, snoring, and the air conditioner was kind of half working, 40-degree heat that day. And I just sat there, and I felt like singing. I needed to sing. I needed to relieve something, and I can't sing. So I went home that day, and I said, why not try to write a play about what's happening and hopefully get it staged one day and get people to think about it and talk about it. And it took 2 years from that time to actually get it done, and a lot has changed in the play since then. I mean, I added a lot of different characters into it. But yeah, it's been a good journey.
And as part of your bio, it says that this actually, as you said on air as well, you actually played this in Egypt. How was it received in Egypt?
I mean, first I had to find the actors in Egypt willing to do the play because when I went back there, everyone's like, oh, be careful, the government. I said, well, there's no more government, isn't there? Revolutions happen, so why can't I say whatever I want? So the actors were kind of, show me the script first. And I said, okay, I'll show you the script. And I showed them the script and I told them the nature of the play. It's very absurd, which meaning it's not very conventional. So they were kind of, when they got over the fact that it might be censored, it might not be censored, they started saying, well, are the audience going to understand it? Are they going to laugh at us? Are they going to, you know, run out? Because it's very confronting. And we gave it a go. We staged it there for 3 nights and people did laugh. Some cried. Some wanted to walk away. A lot of partners were there saying, what are we doing here? A lot of people enjoyed it and really resonated with them.
Well, we're doing it in Richmond at the moment. And if you're familiar with Richmond, there's not too much censorship down there. So it's pretty well received down there by a lot of the people. But some people come in, you know, expecting something normal. Some people come in expecting something whack. You're going to get a different show every night depending on how you're feeling.
Now, the play we're talking about is Teach Me to Cry. We haven't actually mentioned that. That's the name of the play. So Teach Me to Cry is playing until the 19th of May, except for Tuesdays. No, except for Sundays and Mondays. So
it's in its last week now. So from tomorrow evening till this Saturday. So this Tuesday to Saturday in Richmond.
Yep. So you're saying you had people in Egypt cry. Have you had anybody here in Melbourne just walk out crying?
I had someone nearly walk out the other day.
And how did that feel for you guys as actors to have someone nearly walk out?
You got
to
roll with the punches. They jumped up. I think it was when Mo was talking about dancing or getting up and dancing, and they just jumped out of their seat like somebody had pinched them really hard. And what do you do?
Maybe they wanted to dance.
Maybe. That's the thing. You never know. Yeah, but it's every time it's going to be different.
Touches a nerve, eh?
Like, yeah.
And you two are a father-son sort of combo?
That's right. I'm the daddy and Will's the son.
Yeah, no, it's always good having a nice daddy. That's safety.
And guys, how do you get into character? So Muhammad's given you this play, Giuseppe and Will, and how do you get into that those characters?
Well, everyone's kind of got a different... MO for getting warmed up to a play. I don't think there's any kind of traditional way to do it, but Giuseppe has this really kind of wild vocal process where he hits all these ranges.
You ain't seen half of it.
Yeah, ma-ma-ma-ma-me-ma-ma, and he goes all over the place. Yeah.
No, it's more like, no! And a bit more of that.
Really bizarre stuff, whereas I, particularly because I have a lot of really kind of intense scenes where I'm being broken down and screaming, I don't think Mo has seen this, but I start hitting myself really hard in the leg.
I've seen that. I just haven't told you about it.
I start hitting myself as hard as I can.
Can I start hitting you sometime?
To get into the role, maybe. Okay. But anything just to get you pumped up, to get you psyched up. Particularly, depending the mood that the play asks for, you just do it, you know?
There's a lot of walking onto stage coming from somewhere else in the play. So a lot of the time my character spends a lot of time off stage before he comes on. So right before you're about to open the door and walk on, you've got to think, like, where have I just come from? Where has this character just come from? What's my moment before? What did I just say to somebody else before I open this door and walk on stage? Because otherwise you're just going to look like an actor opening a door and walking on stage. That's one of the biggest things, I think.
And besides the door that opens onto stage, tell us a little bit about the props.
Well, Mo is on stage all the time. Mo's on stage. He doesn't get a break.
He's our biggest prop, yeah.
I'm the crazy old man on the stage. I don't want to get off.
Yeah, basically, in terms of props, really minimal. We've got a chair and a music stand. That's it. There's no, like, giant set piece. There's no trees with people in suits and their arms sticking out. It's just chair, music stand. And, yeah. For something like this, too much production design, it's not just the fact that we can't be bothered making stuff and we're too cheap or anything like that. It's just, it's all about the people in the room. Nothing else exists except for those three people.
There is so much going on in the story within the three of us that it would just detract from everything else if we had too much.
Yeah. This is the World Wide Wave here on Joy 94.9. Joined in the studio, the cast and writer-director of Teach Me to Cry, currently playing at the Owl and the Pussycat in Richmond. We're not done speaking with them yet, but we wanted to let you know, if you want to know more about the play, you can check out the owlandcat.com.au website. And in addition to that, we have a set of tickets to give away to the production of Teach Me to Cry. The first person to SMS us at 0427 Joy 949, the capital of Egypt, we'll get those two tickets. Again, SMS us at 0427 Joy 949.
Or you can email us onair@joy.org.au.
And now we got some more music.
We have. We've got a song by Rugab, and the song is called Haifa Wabi.
This is the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9. This week we are exploring Egypt. In the studio we have the director, a writer, and cast of Teach Me to Cry, a play about the Arab Spring in Egypt. Now, we've heard a little bit of discussion about how this has a message for a number of people that anyone going in the audience can see. Mohammed, when you wrote this play, what was the message that you wanted people to take home after they saw it?
I guess that they can do anything. I mean, the revolution means removing a government and putting another government in charge. But I mean, there's always problems with us as people in the country, the way we treat each other and the way we do stuff on a daily basis. And when I was in Egypt, I never had direct contact with the government. The strain that I felt was from day-to-day contact with people, just going to buy a loaf of bread or, you know, just trying to get something signed off or, you know, getting a driver's license takes 5 days. Why does it take 5 days? Because the guy behind the counter doesn't want to serve me. He wants to go drink his cup of tea. Why? He doesn't, you know, does he not like me personally or just, what's the problem there? So,
interesting. I don't think the problem with the motor vehicles is exclusive to Egypt. We make the same jokes in America and Australia, but I say that tongue-in-cheek. And for the cast members, what drew you to want to be a part of this production?
Well, for me personally, I think it's just after I read the script. Well, I thought about, you know, in all honesty, I thought about me first, and I thought, oh, there are some great bits where I can, you know, flex my chops here and show off what I got, you know what I mean? But after that, I just kind of thought, it's short, it's sharp, it's to the point, you know what I mean? And it's something that hasn't been done here before. How many people can say, you know, they've done something about this context, you know?
Speaking of short, sharp, and to the point, how long is the play?
Well, it starts at 8:45, and by about 9:20, it's done.
By so, about 9:20?
Yeah, yeah. So give it or take 30 minutes, 35, 40.
We'll give you a hell of a good time for those 30 minutes, though. Like, a lot happens. It goes to a lot of places. minutes apart, we're laughing. Minutes apart, we're crying. Minutes apart, we're trying to kill each other. Like, it's very... goes to a lot of places really quickly, you know? Yeah. It's got a good rhythm to it, I feel.
Nice. So if you're out there listening, again, we've got 35 minutes. You've been promised you'll laugh, cry, and want to kill someone on stage already.
Or dance.
Or dance as well, yeah. And so you can SMS us at 0427-JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au and let us know that you're interested in those tickets. Now, another thing you might be interested in, like the whole gay and what does gay have to do with Egypt, with the revolution, with Arab Spring. We know what gay has to do with acting, so don't worry too much about that.
We've got that covered, don't worry.
I can tell you all about that.
Yeah, just wondering if any of you had any thoughts or comments on how the whole Arab Spring revolution or how your play connects back to the gay world.
Well, there's certain moments that I fell upon and I sort of discovered in some of the rehearsal process, and I rediscover them every night when we're on stage. And they're these kind of dark moments that happen between the father and the son. And they're not specifically written into the play, because the great thing about this play is that it has tangents that can be taken to any direction. It's quite ambiguous, and you can really make of it what you want. But there are moments that I find as the father where it's in relation to his son, and it's in relation to something that may have happened that was sinister or malicious in a sexual kind of connotation.
And the same thing with me. Like, I personally disagree with that. I didn't think that was the case. But after the second night of performing, I had someone personally tell me that they thought it was about the molestation of the son and him beginning to have these feelings and whatnot. And I completely disagree with him. But, you know, it always comes back to the fact that it's open for interpretation. It's whatever you want it to be. You're not going to fail this play, you know. It's open for everyone, and that's what breaks it away from being pretentious, and that it's every man's play. Yeah.
Great. Worldwide Wave here on Joy 94, talking with the cast of Teach Me to Cry. We're going to take a little break right now, and I think Beck has discovered some more music for us.
We've got Nezra by Hakim. That was Nezra by Hakim. You're back on the Worldwide Wave in 94.9.
We are speaking to the director and cast of Teach Me to Cry. Of course, we're spending time discussing Egypt this week. Interestingly enough, during the Arab Spring, it was about change. And you heard the director of Teach Me to Cry, Mohammed, say that he wanted to tell people that you can make a difference. And there is hope that with the revolution, so to speak, that there is the possibility of change for everyone in Egypt, including the gay and lesbian community. However, things don't look so strong. The European Parliament, of course, issued a report on Egypt's human rights back in 2008. And at the time, the Mubarak regime basically laughed it off. However, there's another group there that has since taken a little bit more power after the revolution, the Muslim Brotherhood. They sided with the European Parliament's decision on talking against Egypt's human rights, and they said that respect of human rights is now a concern for all people. They were, however, quick to point out that those people don't include homosexuals. So it's a possibility of a change. Things weren't so great, and I can go through an entire list of not so fun fast facts of how the Egyptian former government didn't necessarily prosecute homosexuals, but they didn't exactly go out of their way to make them feel welcome in the land of Egypt. There's hope that that could change, but there's no sign that that is going to change. And while doing some research on this show, and I won't get incredibly religious, and I'm not a religious scholar, but I found an interesting comment from one of the bloggers out there, and they said that the major difference between Christianity and Muslims' view on homosexuality and their view on so many other things is that basically, Christianity has the ability to adapt and change the teaching of God, whereas there is something called the Doors of a name that I can't pronounce. Basically, it means that the book written by Muhammad is closed. The Quran is no longer open for interpretation. So these things that have been taught...
The Doors of Ittihad, I think it is.
Oh, thank you for that. It's saying that the way things have been are the way that things will remain, and that makes it difficult for change. And so in a country that is up and coming and hoping for a democratic future, that's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Well, it's so much research there, isn't it? I mean, after the revolution, everyone went down to protest over anything. If they thought, you know, price of milk was too much, they would protest about it. And it got to a point where people were getting annoyed because they couldn't get to work because everyone's protesting on every corner. But there were no gay protests at all there. I mean, when I went there, I met a lot of gay Egyptians, and they had their own way of protesting, a lot of underground, you know, kind of secret society things happening on the internet and in certain homes. They would, you know, they would make a time where they would meet in a home, and then they would cancel that time just before they meet, and they meet in another home because one of the person that could have heard it was a policeman or something. So it was very sophisticated, and there's a big community there. You know, great big community there.
There is a very big community, or so I found out in the research. And while there seems to have been a lot of gay people fighting for that revolution and protesting, I think it's kind of understandable that there were some other civil rights that they were fighting for first. And those sorts of things get lost in the translation, so to speak, and whether the time for them to come back and make that comment now or in the future, we shall see. Now, on to your return visit to Egypt. You said earlier in the show that you were there pre-revolution, but then you went back and you actually put this production on after the revolution, obviously. But I guess my main question for you is, you had lived there, you had heard about what was going on. You said you wanted to go back to see if things had changed. Had they changed?
Yeah, well, I got off the plane and I'm like, revolution, the country's changed. What does it look like? And things are still the same. You know, you hop in a taxi and he's trying to trick you. He's trying to get an extra $5 off you. And I'm like, all right, that's all right. You know, then move on to the next bit. And it kept changing. And then I wanted to find out where the revolution happened in Liberation Square, the Hariri Square. And it took me a week and a half to get there because every time I try to get there, people say, don't go, it's dangerous. Don't go, only thugs are there. Don't go because blah, blah, blah. And I actually got attracted to the fact that I'm never going to make it. I'm never going to see where it all happened. And every time you hop in a taxi, someone speaks about the revolution in a different way. And I guess it took me about 2 weeks to realize that there wasn't that much change. And the people that were happy about the revolution had kind of come to a point where we haven't done much work. There's still a lot more work to be done.
You said there was still an element of fear when you were there, and primarily when you initially were seeking actors for the play, there was that, no, you can't talk bad about the government. Wait a minute, the government doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
How far did that fear carry over?
For a couple of weeks, there was no police in the street, so that was kind of cool. You know, you can walk around, do what you want. But a couple of weeks after that, I was riding a bus home after doing a rehearsal at 2 in the morning, and the police just stopped us at 2 in the morning, you know, intimidated us, opened up the bus, what's in your bag? And I said, oh, you know, I've got nothing in my bag. It's got a camera and a phone. Oh, please get out. And I said, what do I have to get out for? He goes, what do you do for work? And I'm a director. He goes, oh, you're a director, are you? He kind of laughed at me. Like, you're a director, so you don't have to worry about you, kind of thing. You're no threat.
Little did he know.
Yeah. Here I am. Yeah. Watch out.
Who got the last laugh? Yeah.
Exactly. This is the World Wide Wave here on Joy at 94.9. We do have another set of tickets to give away. If you're interested in seeing Teach Me to Cry at the Owl and Cat, you can buy your own and by going to the website at owlandcat.com.au, or you can be the first to SMS us here at 0427JOY949. We've got a set of tickets to give away to the Owl, excuse me, to Teach Me to Cry playing at the Owl and Cat in Richmond. I think we might have a little bit of time for some music, Beck. What do you think?
We do. Or I'm just going to remind people that they can also email us on air@joy.org.au. You're back on the World Wide Wave on 94.9. We're here with the entire cast of Teach Me to Cry.
We're all here.
Where's the chair?
All three of them.
The chair is missing. Yeah. We ran all of last week from Tuesday to Saturday, so we're in our second and final week this week. So we're back in the theatre tomorrow night at 8:45, and we'll be going until Saturday night. So from, what's tomorrow, the 15th to the 19th?
Yeah.
And you've kindly come in on your day off.
No, we take no days off.
No, the life of an actor never finishes.
We're all struggling thespians who know more about anything than everybody because we're actors, and obviously we're a lot more brighter than the people listening, so yeah, you know, I mean, geez.
From the words of an actor, there you are.
What was really interesting to me before, I want to see Mo's next play about these secret clandestine societies, these kind of queer societies in Egypt, because I don't think there's been a single work of fiction in any medium about that. Like, I don't recall anything about that. That would be a fascinating story to me. I don't know. That sounds pretty cool.
And, Mohammed, do these secret societies exist at a certain class level?
I think they probably started up from the upper class. You make it sound so, you know, secret society stuff. Yeah, it is a bit like that. I guess it started from the upper class because they have the time to do that stuff. But, I mean, you know, working class also have their own, you know, techniques, if you want to call them that, I guess.
Yeah, for meeting up and...
Yeah.
Well, interesting that you made a comment about wanting to see something about these clandestine underground communities, so to speak. I've just been handed a little blurb that says, in 1999, the public performance of a play which explored homophobia was shut down by the government after just a few performances. However, in 2008, the director directed a groundbreaking award-winning independent film and about an Egyptian gay guy, which provoked protests from clerics and government officials who wanted the film banned, if not destroyed. So apparently, I have no name on what that play is, but there was at least one show out there
Written by Meher Sabri, is that the one?
Yes. It didn't seem to get such a great audience
in Egypt. I think the Blu-ray slipped by them, but yeah. They would probably have a really good director's commentary, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Very lengthy, very informative as well. This is the World Wide Wave. We're in Egypt. We've been speaking with the cast and director of Teach Me to Cry, a play about or with the background of Egypt Arab Spring. Thank you so much for taking the time to come in on your day off, guys, and tell us a little about your play and about your experiences in Egypt. It's been a great pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having us. It's been awesome.
It's been great.
Thank you very much.
Now, once again, they are in the Teach Me to Cry, which is playing at the Owl and the Pussycat in Richmond. You can get more information on theowlandcat.com.au.
But Dave, you're the lucky winner of the tickets, so congratulations.
Dave receives from Waverly two tickets to Teach Me to Cry, which is a playing at the Owl and Cat. Congratulations, Dave.
This is World Wide Wave, and that was not the belly dancing song. That was Samira Saeed with Aweeni Beak. Is that right?
Let me have a look.
Aweeni Beak.
I'm...
Where's that? Where's
making that up?
I'm not making that up, really. I think I got her name right, Samira Saeed.
Aweeni Beak, yeah, by Samira Saeed.
Yeah, what does that mean, Mohammed?
It's to do with something with you, Aweeni Beak. I think kind of keep me around your arms and hold me. I mean, in Arabic, it has nothing
to do with belly dancing, however.
No.
Nothing about it's a lot of kind of caressing
sensual,
and holding on
wasn't
to.
It?
Like beaks that are really weeny, you know, just really.
That's what I was thinking. That's the image that came to me.
I have a feeling that's not what it means, but that's okay. Let's rumble it.
And we've just had Graham from Bundura who phoned in to say thanks for having our guests on today and hearing about Egypt. He's really enjoyed it, listening to A Different World.
Well, thank you, Graham, for listening.
Thanks, Graham. Can I ask you a question, Giuseppe? Being the father and all in the play, are there any kind of gay undertones about the script and how you read it and how you... Are there?
Well, I found a few moments, like I was saying before about, you know, the connection with the sun and that. it seems like there's a line or two that pops out in the son's speech earlier on where he talks about, I'm going to tell him who I really am. And it could be taken into any kind of connotation, really, but it's amazing about this play because, you know, myself being a gay man, I take those images in different ways, and audience members can take them in all kinds of different interpretations. That's what's really great about it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought it's, because when I, from the very moment I first read it, I always kind of thought it's about this kid, his dad, in the, without, you know, spoiler warning, his dad is kind of part of the revolution, leading this revolution, is a big important figure. And I always thought it was about the son wanting to start his own kind of project and do his own kind of leadership and become his own man, so to speak. I mean, that's how I always thought of it, you know, but like Giuseppe said, it can be different every night. But yeah, I mean, as long as you enjoy it, that's the most important thing. I mean, even if you don't enjoy it, this play will make you feel something. Even if you... we feel we've done our job. I mean, if you come in and you go, what the hell was that? I'm scratching my head. Or if you come in and go, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't have the right to talk about this and they haven't been to that. Good. It's got you thinking. It's got you talking about it. That's exactly what we want. So, you know, by no means do we, you know, have any kind of enlightened political view. This play isn't exactly about getting into the specifics of it, but it's kind of asking questions for the audience to ask. Yeah, basically.
And what kind of audience feedback have you had?
In terms of feedback, the few feedback that I've had from people is mainly questions. Mainly questions for me personally. I mean, Giuseppe himself has had a few people come up to him and come up with some pretty offbeat theories, but yeah.
What kind of theories, Giuseppe?
Well, it was funny. I've had some girls who are currently studying drama at university, at Deakin, and they almost felt like they had to be really quiet and respectful throughout the whole performance. You know, as actors, we're getting right up there in your face and we're communicating to you quite intimately. And these girls wanted to react during the performance, but they felt that they couldn't. They felt that they had to really be quite respectful. But afterwards, I sat down and, you know, we had a glass of wine and we were just chatting about the show, and they got so animated and they were asking questions about, you know, where's the revolution and what was happening and why was your character saying this, that and the other. And it was those things that I said to them, don't feel like you have to sit there during the show and, you know, pay homage to us as actors and not, you know, not interact with us, because we're getting there in your face. Like, it's such an intimate little space, and it's all about wanting to see the reaction on the audience member's face while you're talking to them, while you're acting for them.
Yeah, like, don't feel that it's like some, you know, pardon me, some great intellectual pursuit and you have to be sitting there with a beret and, you know, stroking
not,
your goatee to get into it. Don't think it like that at all. You know, even if you can get, like, just the smallest base feeling, the most base human emotions from it, that's the most important thing. And there are things in it that everybody can identify with and everybody can see, you know.
Maybe Dave, who won the tickets, is going to jump up on stage after hearing that.
Yeah.
Do it, Dave, I dare you.
Yeah, because many themes about Glen Waverley and the preceding Sindel and Mount Waverley, yeah.
Joy 94.9, and this is the World Wide Wave. This week we've been in Egypt. We've had the director and the cast of Teach Me to Cry here in the studio. Thanks again, boys, for coming in and chatting about your play. We really appreciate you taking the time to come in.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Been great.
And that is Teach Me to Cry, playing at the Owl and the Pussycat on Swan Street in Richmond. You can get tickets at the door. Apparently, there's also a full bar next door that you can have a drink before and after and during, maybe, if you're so inclined.
They stock Recorder League.
There you go. And you can also find out more information on the play and look at purchasing tickets at theowlandcat.com.au. Whether you're listening to us now or in the future, we do love when you speak to us. You can check us out and like us on our Facebook page, World Wide Wave. That's one word. You can also send us an email to our private email account. That's worldwidewave@ymail.com. We've also got some sort of tweeting thing, but the tweeting thing person is not there, so it's we'll tell you about that next time. Coming up next week, I believe we are off to Malta. Is that correct, Beck?
We are off to Malta, and we've got another live guest in the studio.
Fantastic. We like the live guests. Coming up next, we have Kiss My Arts. But as always, we'd like to thank you for riding the World Wide Wave. And we're going to leave you with some more music. Beck.
This is the belly dancing song, and it's called Chic Shack Shock.
Leaving on an up note with the belly dancing.
There's more Joy news and views at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.